Atma by the Supreme Soul, Prajyotitai, enlivened, Prabhu, the Master, Manyamanaha, thinking, Idam, this Srishtam, created body, Atmanam, as his own self, Iha, in this Sajjate, he becomes entangled. Translation. The individual living being, the master of the material body, uses his material senses, which have been activated by the supersoul, to try to enjoy sense objects composed of the three modes of nature. Thus, he misidentifies the created material body with the unborn eternal self and becomes entangled in the illusory energy of the Lord. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the living entity is called Prabhu, or Master, because he is a minute part and parcel of the Supreme Master, Krishna. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita 15.8, the Lord has described the living entity as Ishvara, the controller. Shadiram yadavapnoti yachapyut kramatishvara vihibhaitani sunyati vayogandhani bhashyat. The living entity in the material world carries his various conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Srila Prabhupada has commented in his purport, here the living entity is described as Ishvara, the controller of his own body. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade, and if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. This statement confirms the words swamatra and atma prasiddhaye in text 3 of this chapter. If the Supreme Lord were to interfere with the minute independence of the living entity, there would be no question of the living entities engaging in the loving service of the Lord, since love implies a spontaneous free choice by the lover. Here the word Prabhu indicates that just as a child, having received a toy car from his father, pedals on the sidewalk, imitating the father, who drives an actual car, the living entity pedals around the material universe in the innumerable material bodies selected for him. Selected for him by the Supreme Lord from an assortment of 8,400,000 species. Thus, the living entity, infatuated with the false ego of the material body, creates a fearful situation in which he undergoes repeated birth and death, as described in the statement, Vayam Dutiyabha Nibeshitaksyat, Bhagavatam 11.237. Srila Jiva Goswami has given another explanation for this verse. If the word Prabhu is taken to mean the Supreme Lord, the word Gunai can be understood to mean good qualities, since Guna can refer to the material modes of nature or to admirable qualities, as in the verse, Yasyasti Bhakti Bhagavati Kinchana Sarva Gunais Chatra Samasate Sura. This verse would then mean that the Lord, by his transcendental qualities, Gunai, such as mercy, is able to relish the transcendental qualities, Gunam, of his pure devotees. Atma Pratyoditai would then indicate that by surrendering unto the Lord, who is the reservoir of all good qualities, the pure devotees become similarly endowed with godly qualities. The words Manyamana Idam Srishtam Atmanam would indicate that the Lord accepts the body of his pure devotee to be on the same spiritual level as he himself. As indicated in the verse Acharyam Mam Vajaniyan Navamanyeta Karhichit, the Lord is, which means, one should consider the Acharya as myself and never insult him in any way. The Lord is attracted by the loving devotional service of his pure devotees and thus becomes entangled in the network of their loving relationship with him. For example, after the battle of Kurukshetra, when Krishna was leaving for his own city, Dwarka, the loving appeal of Maharaj Yudhisthira forced the Lord to remain for several more weeks in Hastinapur. Similarly, when the elderly gopis, or let's say elder gopis, of Vrindavan clapped their hands, Krishna would dance like a puppet, keeping time to their rhythm. In relation to this subject matter, Srila Jiva Goswami has quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 9.468. So we can chant it together. Sadavo vidhyam mayam sadhu nam vidhyam taham madanyate na jananti naham te vyomanagapi. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything but me, and I do not know anyone but them. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the word Prabhu may also be understood as follows. The word pra indicates prakarshena, or excessively, and bhu indicates bhavati, or taking birth. Thus, Prabhu indicates prakarshena deva tiryag adishu bhavatiti saha, or repeatedly taking birth among the demigods, animals, human beings, and other forms of life. Confirming the statement by Srila Jiva Goswami concerning the Lord's attachment to the spiritualized body of a pure devotee, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has quoted the following verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anja 4, 192-93. Diksha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan, se kale krishna tare kare atma sam. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders unto the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. Se deha kare tahar chidanandamai, aprakrita dehe tanra chadanam bhajoy. When the devotee's body is thus transformed into spiritual existence, the devotee in that transcendental body renders service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Om jnana tamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this series of verses spoken by Antariksha Yogendra is in answer to the question, I'd like to understand the material energy. This was the question from Maharaj Nimi, if you recall. He wants to how that works. And so, as you've been hearing, the first verse describes something that was very related to an answer that Sukadeva Goswami gave to Maharaj Parikshit at the beginning of chapter 87 of the 10th canto. The question was, how can sound, such as the Vedas, which is after all just sound and vibrating in our ears, how can that indicate or describe that which is beyond the senses, which is completely transcendental? This was a very important question. And then the answer seems to be a non sequitur. And Sukadeva Goswami says the answer, which is just like the second verse here in this series. Here, the first verse. Almighty Arm King, by activating the material elements, the primeval soul of all creation has sent forth all living beings in higher and lower species so that these conditioned souls can cultivate either sense gratification or ultimate liberation according to their desire. So the answer is that Krishna, in allowing us, you know, to exit the spiritual world and to take up this material world, he gives us a body with senses, which can, his desire is that we use those senses to reconnect with him and to go back to Godhead. So the whole meaning of the material body is twofold. One is to provide us the means to stay bound here if we choose to enjoy sense gratification and stay identified and keep our identification with the material body. And the other is by using the senses, beginning with the ear, to reconnect with Krishna and ultimately to escape this material world. So that's the reason for this material body. So therefore, Krishna makes available our ability to understand something about transcendence by hearing the sounds of the Vedas or sounds of the Vedic literature, hearing the Hare Krishna mantra. But we appreciate and understand more and more according to our purity. Someone on the street, right? There's a chanting party going on down at the football game. I've been at several of those. Very ecstatic. Thousands of people coming, you know. And well, we're chanting at the top of our lungs and the name is going into their ears. But what are they actually hearing? What are they appreciating? Don't get me wrong. I know that it's doing them incredible welfare, right? Just by hearing the name, I just read a verse by Haridas Thakur, as Prabhupada explains, trying to console Lord Chaitanya, who was lamenting how all these people are going to be saved, of Antileva chapter 3, if you recall. And then he quotes a verse saying, even just once hearing the name, so many sinful reactions are eradicated. What to speak of chanting the name? What to speak of actually understanding a little bit and becoming serious about chanting. But even just once hearing one holy name is extremely beneficial. But what do the people do? Oh yeah, there's the Hare Krishnas, then let's get going, let's take a little beer and get into the stadium, right? So that's their, they don't appreciate anything, but that doesn't matter. It's still having its effect. But if we are fortunate enough to hear an explanation, hear the pure sounds from the pure devotee, or recorded in the Shastra, and we take it seriously, then we cultivate purity through hearing and chanting another process of devotional service. Then the name means more to us. The deity means more to us. Tulsi means more. Everything, we begin to appreciate the real spiritual values of every way in which Krishna has reached out to us. And this, I want to come back to this theme. So, but this whole section is after all about how Maya works. So he continues in text 4 with describing how the living entities become a condition. The supersoul, Krishna's expansion, enters the material bodies of the created beings, activates the mind and senses, and thus causes the conditioned souls to approach the three modes of material nature for sense gratification. So the supersoul is simply reacting to our desire. We want to have this illusory world where we can pretend to be separate from Krishna. This is our whole disease, right? Bhayam vidya bandhavesha takshad ishad paitasya viparhiyo asmati. Famous verse about the origin of fear. But the whole key is vidya bandhavesha takshad, is to be absorbed in the illusion that there's something separate from Krishna. That's what the way the vidya is explained here. And how do we do that? Turning our back on Krishna. Ishada petasa literally means turning away from Krishna. And thus becoming, everything comes upside down. Viparyas means we have a reverse conception. And asmati, we forget all about who we actually are, who Krishna is and everything. And we're simply absorbed in these dualities. And that can go on for millions and millions of lifetimes of Brahma. Until there's an intervention. A pure devotee or Krishna himself comes and penetrates through the illusory, if you will, mask that we put about ourselves, and somehow awakens a little bit some interest in transcendence. And that's why we're all here. Krishna, through his representative, Srila Prabhupada, or through Srila Prabhupada's representative, or as his books, or somehow or other, in a moment of a little mode of goodness, the idea of transcendence and the idea of God and a relationship with God became at least interesting to us. The awakening of faith, adhav shraddha. There has to be that a little awakening of faith or interest in the genuine science of God. Because there's so many different ways you can get diverted. I met this poor boy in Tucson. He wanted to talk to me. You know, so okay, let's sit down. We sit down at the table, and all he could come out with, you know, was oh, so many ways I'm involved with this shaman, you know, and then I take the medicine, right? I take the medicine, and then I see all these different things coming in and out of me, and you know, he went on and on. He got diverted. He's been diverted. Obviously, he has some desire for transcendence. He's after coming to the Hare Krishna temple, but he's stuck in all of this diversion, as it said at the beginning of Bhagavatam. Manna sumanda matayo manna bhagya yupadvija. First of all, most people are completely lazy about any kind of spiritual life. And if they become interested, they become misguided. So many, you know, you just get on the internet and Google spiritual life. I'm sure you'll find about a billion hits, you know. And we have a bunch of them on there, you know, but there's many others you can get diverted from. So we're so fortunate that we're in the proper channel here. Under the influence of Srila Prabhupada's pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. I mean, Krishna's pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. So, the mind becomes activated. Now, the present verse, notice how this purport is quite long in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidyanatha Maharaj was doing it all alone. I know because I worked on it. This was the part before Gopi Purana Prabhu joined him in Miami. And so he was translating all the commentaries. And having translated them all, he wanted to use them in the book. And so we get these nice little comments from Vishnu Chakravarti and Jiva Goswami and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Very fascinating. That's why you find these long purports. Later on, it became too much to do it on his own. And so Gopi Parinanda Prabhu joined him, and Gopi Parinanda Prabhu would translate all the commentaries. You know? And then Vrindavan says would use those parts of it that he felt, so the purports get smaller, because he didn't translate himself. Anyway, it's great that we have all of this information. So what's fascinating here is that the first part explains the kind of obvious, you know, meaning of the words, right? That the individual living being, master of the material body, uses material senses which have been activated by the super soul to try to enjoy the sense objects composed of the three modes. So the super soul, you know, is upadrishta anumantasha. Right? He's just overseeing and permitting, sanctioning. He's not certainly approving of our nonsensical activities, but we wanted it, and so he gives us the intelligence and the senses, everything is coming, so that we can engage in the illusion. And that's what's being described here. So now there are all of these double meanings here. The first is the master of the body. Now, we're not the master, we're not the purusha, right? But we're described as such in the Bhagavad Gita itself, because we're acting that way. Purushak pakatisto hi bhunkte pakati jang gunan karanang gunasangosa sadasadyoni janasu. Very related verse. The living entity within the material world is described as purusha, because we're trying to be the master and the enjoyer. So therefore, in this particular verse, we're described as purusha. Bhunkte pakati jangonan. We're enjoying, or let us say experiencing, the different varieties of the gunas, unlimited, you know, according to our desire and according to our karma. Sometimes we don't want to experience something and it comes in our face, right? It's happening like that. So as we react to that, as we associate with the modes of nature, we are determining our destiny. We get good or bad births. Bad births are certainly lower than human life. Or even within human life, you know, there's so many places we could be born, so many situations. How many billions of people, the 7 billion on the earth, are just struggling day to day just to keep body and soul together and so forth. No time for spiritual life, you know, no time to even think of these things. So the fortunate souls, such as ourselves, who have facility and some understanding of the need for purifying the senses, and undergoing discipline under the guidance of pure devotee and the Shastra, we are very fortunate, and the way in which we repay or try to reciprocate is by giving this to others, this knowledge. Because it's really the knowledge. And unless you start to inquire into these kind of subject matters, you remain bound. What is that verse by Rishabdi? Parabhavas tavadabodha jato. Yavan na jigyasata atma tattam. Yavat kriyastavidam manovai paramatmakam yena sharira bandha. So this sharira bandha is the bondage to a physical body. This is what we're undergoing, life after life after life. So here he's saying, what is the origin of that? The origin is ignorance, abodhajato. It's called defeat, parabhavas, Prabhupada described it, means birth after birth after birth and suffering. Is born of ignorance. And therefore, very logically, that bondage and defeat will continue until we attain transcendental knowledge. And that we can only attain that when we become interested in it. Gigyasata atmatam. Notice this word gigyas. We recognize it from the very first sutra of the Brahma Sutras. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now, in human form of life, one should be inquisitive into Brahman, the absolute truth. Defined in the next sutra as that which from everything comes, and it goes on like that. So this curiosity, interest, after all, we only inquire into things that we're interested in. And if we're really interested, the more interested we are, the more that we'll absorb the knowledge, right? This is shushusho, this is the ardent hearing, probably this guy's ardent hearing, a wonderful phrase, you know? You can hear with half your mind, or none of it, you know? You can hear because you have to be there. You know, yeah, okay, you're here because they're going to test me, you know. Or you can hear, you know, voluntarily, because this is life-giving rasayana. This is the nectar of Krishna consciousness that you're taking, and it's your lifeline to get out of this material world when you understand. There's all these levels of hearing. beginning of Bhagavatam, it says, one who has this ardent hearing for the Bhagavatam will quickly have Krishna manifest in their heart. So what is the need of any other scripture? You know, isn't that what we want? Yes, if we understand the need. So that's what we're hearing here. That's why Prabhupada, so much emphasized daily class, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So, he's describing very clearly the way in which the living entity gets entangled and remains entangled. All, you know, the super soul is staying with him throughout his sojourn within this material world, giving him inspiration, go here, go to that. You want this? Here, try it this way. Now, unfortunately, because you did that, now you have to suffer this, you know. So now you have a whole other calculation, how to avoid the miseries, you know. That's also part of being in the material world, trying to enjoy and then trying to avoid the reactions from that enjoyment. Because as soon as you try to enjoy this, the senses, there's going to be misery. Isn't that what Krishna said? Yehi sangsparsha cha bhoga dukha yona evite. That very enjoyment of the senses is the source of our misery. Prabhupada says in the Nipa Purport, I think in the second chapter, that yes, there may be some enjoyment, there certainly is some enjoyment, but actually that enjoyment that you get is the worst enemy of the spirit soul. The enjoyment that you get, because it drags you more. Let me try it again. And let me try it again. Right? And then eventually you can't enjoy anymore, and so you're lamenting, but the mind is still filled with all these desires of enjoyment. So you get another body to keep going. That's called karmatmakam. That's also in this verse. It says, Parabhavas tava the bodha jato yavan the jigyasata atmatutvam. Yavat kriyas tava didam manovai karmatmakam nina sharira bandhas. Very important verse of Rishabhdev, right near the beginning of the fifth chapter. And he starts with this famous verse about renunciation or tapasya. So what is he saying there? He says, Yavat kriyas, as long as you are acting fruitively, that's called kriya in this context. Yeah, because tavad idam manovai karmatmakam. Your mind will remain saturated with food of desires called karmatmakam. Makes sense, right? You're acting fruitively. You may enjoy the fruits, or maybe you can't enjoy them. So you become even more anxious. And finally, you become envious because they're enjoying, you know, this is very complicated, but it's all part of karmatmakam. And by that karmatmaka, that fruit of desire saturated mind, sharira bandha. You stay bound up to a body. Because it's all, you have to have these senses in order to try to enjoy those desires. And so after a time, as we're all learning, as we approach or actually go over the 70-year line, the senses aren't as strong as they were. You can't enjoy with them anymore. Unfortunately, that's a great blessing in this kind of ashram. I know. But he's renounced. But the point is, as you get older, you realize what a blessing it is that your enjoyment is not coming from the senses, but from contact with Krishna. I was just rediscovered a verse that I hadn't chanted in a long time, you know. A verse I memorized a long time. I saw it in the CC. You know this verse. So the context is, Lord Chaitanya is with Sukhdamada, and Shivananda Sen's son, Puridas, who later became Kavi Karnapur, thank you. So he's just a boy, maybe 5 years old. So Lord Chaitanya says, chant, Puri, chant, Hare Krishna. He won't chant. Chant, won't chant, silent. So Lord Chaitanya turns to Sukhdamada and he says, I've gotten the whole world to chant Hare Krishna. This boy won't chant. What's going on? So Sukhdamada says, looks at him and says, I think he's chanting in his mind. So then they say, recite. So he recites a verse that he composed even at age 5. He was a very, you know, skilled writer. That's why he's called Kavi Karnapur. So this is the verse. It's a beautiful verse. Shavaso kubalahi makshno andana manaso mahinda manidama vindavanama manina mandana makidam hari jayati. You remember this one? So, beautiful verse. So what it says is, Shavaso kubalayam. For the gopis of Vrindavan, Krishna is the blue lotus on their ear, decorating their ear. Shavaso kubalayam. Akshno anjanam. And for their eyes, he's the blackish cudgel. And on their chest, he's the sapphire hanging there. Shavaso kubalayam akshno. Udaso mahindra manidhama. Vrindavanam amaninam. For these ladies of Vrindavan, Krishna is all of their ornaments. You know, English is kind of clunky, but you can see the Sanskrit. So, you know, it's just as tasty as when I learned it 40 years ago. So that's enjoyment. I'm enjoying that. You know, it's not sense gratification. It's glorifying Krishna. So that is such a blessing not to be entangled, you know, in the anxiety of growing old and not being able to enjoy those things that you need to enjoy. The whole world is like going through that. Oh, okay, I'll go and spend $10,000, $20,000 on some adjustment so I can look, you know, 5 years in. Isn't it? That's going on. Billion, multi-billion dollars. You know? Or they know, you know, from the internet. I bought a few herbs and things. They know that I'm looking for, so every day, you know, get this, you know, you can preserve this, you can do this. Don't worry. You know, reverse the aging process. You know, it just goes into the spam folder, you know. But this is such a blessing to be, live simply, reduce sense gratification to the minimum, and whatever, okay, we're going to have to eat, all right, so we have this whole prasadam program where you can enjoy the taste, but you remember Krishna, this is Krishna's reciprocation, it becomes an act of love, right? It's a loving exchange. You're not dragged down by the eating process, but you're uplifted by it. There's a way of doing it where it's uplifted. So you can see, and if at the time of death, you know, if we can actually pass the test and be surrounded by devotees chanting Hare Krishna and simply desiring to serve Krishna with these senses, remembering the beautiful, then you don't have to come back again to this prison house, which begins with the body itself. So understanding how it goes on is very important. There's many passages like this described. The third candle comes to mind, Kapila Dev, how the living entity, you know, gets entangled by the false ego and interacting with the modes of nature and everything. So the whole key is the ego, right? It's the false ego. Who am I? What is my ultimate interest? How should I act for my upliftment rather than degradation? Udredatmanatmanam, Natmanam Avasari 8. Right in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the whole thing is the mind. You know, one should not degrade oneself from the mind, but uplift oneself. The mind is the greatest friend and the worst enemy. So that mind, which has been trained, and after all, it is training and practice, to always think of Krishna, is certainly the best friend of the living entity. But the mind, which is karmatmakam, saturated with material desires and anxieties and fears and grievances and grudges, you know, that's our worst enemy. So it's not easy because we're so conditioned, so habituated to acting and thinking in this way. So it's a process. It's a discipline. But Prabhupada has given us everything. And Krishna, through the spiritual master and through the Shastra, he is helping us in every kind of way. And not only that, but association. All of these, you know, this beautiful temple. Every time I come here, I'm knocked out by the beauty of these deities. You know, you're so fortunate. I mean, of course, I love Radha Giridhari, don't get me wrong, every morning in New Govardhan, San Diego. But there's a special flavor, all of the care, the flowers, it's just, you know, you're very fortunate to have this. So, can you imagine? Just to project. If we were actually pure, we'd walk in, we couldn't even practically offer a bait, we'd just start crying and interpolating right on the, you know, as soon as we see them. Just like Lord Chaitanya, you couldn't even go in the Jagannath temple. You know, he's showing us, right? Because he went in there once and faded and went into Samadhi. So just, you know, to see. But that's, Krishna's reaching out because we can't see pure spirit, so he comes in so-called form of stone or wood or metal. You know, but it's the same Krishna, and you know, we can offer prayers. I love to offer. I'll share with you some of the special prayers I have because I have the Krishna Balaram altar here. So years ago, Bandi Narayan Maharaj, he asked me, "Do you know any obeisances to Krishna Balaram? You know, a verse, because he goes around and beware, he goes to Vrindavan all the time and." He wanted to get it. I said, no, I don't, but I know someone who might, and you know him too. Bhakti Vishrambha, Madhava Maharaj. Because he's into it. That's why his name is Vishrambha. It's because he was known to really like that Sakya Ras and the intimate confidential thing. So he wrote to him and said, sure. And he sent a very beautiful prayer from the what is it? Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava? I think it's all about the Sakya Rasa. And so whenever I come here, I get an opportunity to chant. Of course, I chanted in Vrindavan, in New Govardhan, because we have Jagannath deities. So there's Krishna and Balaram, but here especially. So here's the verse. I can make it available for you if you like. So he says, Jaladatta Shashivarna Gopaveshao Kishora. Sahachata Gane Vrindai Kvijamano Vrajeshao. Natavada Jitta Veshao Nilapitam Bharadyo Jagada Janana Hetu Rama Krishna Natosmi. I offer my obeisances to Rama and Krishna, and who are the complexion of a fresh rain cloud and the moon. Shashivarna, Jaladatta Shashivarna. Gopavesha, they have the aspect of these young coward boys, Kishora, adolescent boys. And they're with their friends, they're playing in Vrindavan. You know, Sahachatagana Vrindai Kri Dimano Vrajesha, they are the lords of Vrindavan, Vrajesha. Their dress defeats the best of dancing actors. Nothing but a Jita Vesha, Nilapi Tambarava. Balaram is in blue and Krishna is in yellow. Jagatajanana Hetu, but they are the origin of the whole universe. Jagatajanana Hetu, Rama Krishna Anatos, may offer obeisance to Rama Krishna. A beautiful prayer. You know? So, this is the way in which the senses can be engaged in purifying our mind so that it comes to the point of constant remembrance. And with that, I'd like to share a beautiful verse that you may not know. From the end of the 12th chapter of the 5th canto. This is Judd Bard preaching to King Rahugana. So he's gone through this whole description of the material energy and all the dangers and everything. And now he's describing a verse about how to get out of it. So it's very appropriate. He says, Tasman naro asanga susanga jata jnanasinenaiva vivrikna moha hadin tariha katana shutabhyam. So he says, therefore, by giving up bad association and only giving good association, so that's why asanga susanga. Tasma narod, any human being, asanga susanga jata gives rise to what? The sword of knowledge, jnanasina. And in this world, vivritna moha. Even in this world, we can cut off all of the web of illusion, the vipna moha. And then what? Hadim tariha katana shutabhyam. And by hearing and chanting the pastimes or activities of the Lord, Hari, hadim tariha katana shutabhyam, labda smritir. Now, labda smritir has two meanings. Prabhupada translates it as regains one's memory of who we are and our relationship with Krishna and everything else. Vishnu Chakravarti describes it as attaining constant remembrance. Labda smriti. And then what? Yati, yachati paramadvana. One goes straight on the path back to the supreme abode. Yati atiparam advanaha. Advana is a path. What a wonderful verse. And then Prabhupada, this wonderful little purport, he describes, and this is why we've started this Hare Krishna movement. We we invite everyone to come. We provide their room and board and give them a chance to, you know, go back to God. So that's what it takes. We have to have that sword, you know, the sword of constant remembrance or the sword of knowledge. It's described right in the second chapter, first canto. Yadanu yasinayukta karma gundinabandanam chindanti govidasita kona kuya katadatam. Who would not be attracted? Who would not try to get attracted to this katha so that you can get Anudyasana is the sword, literally, of constant remembrance, which cuts off all your karma. But more, Rishabhdev is describing, and gives you the ability to be absorbed in hearing and chanting Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, thus regaining our remembrance of our Siddha Sarup and going straight back to God. So it's up to us. What are we going to hear and chant? How are we going to absorb our mind? It's all the mind, and that's the understanding of this verse that I get. Of course, we have this wonderful other understanding Jiva Goswami gives, because going back to the first verse, that the purpose is twofold. Yes, we're giving these senses in order to, you know, enjoy and stay entangled, but also we're giving the senses in order to we connect Krishna. So he interprets it in a different way, as you heard, that Krishna is enjoying the good qualities of his devotees. This probably can be otherwise understood. So we'll leave that because that's a whole other understanding. But that's there also. The super soul is ready at any moment to help us, to enlighten us, to appear externally as the spiritual master in the Shastra. That's described also. To give us good instruction and to give us intelligence on how we can go in the path of light rather than the path of darkness. It's all up to us. So, any questions or comments? And then we're going to just read that Markandeya Bhagavad Dhamma translation at the end. Dhammasana Guru. Yes, I saw. Go
ahead. You didn't get it. You didn't get to this part in the purport.
That's a long purport. Yeah, it's a long
purport. The quotes that are used from Antilila 4. I've often wondered, how Prabhupada translates at the time of initiation when a devotee fully surrenders unto the service of the Lord. Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. And then the subsequent verse, when the devotee's body is just transformed into spiritual existence, the devotee in that transcendental body renders service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Now, most of us in this room have been initiated, but
right.
I don't think so many of us see our bodies as, on that level. And, Prabhupada in the Nectar of Instruction, he uses this verse too, and he describes diksha as a process.
Yeah.
So it seems like this is the kind of conclusion of the process that's actually being described in this verse. And, also then Prabhupada, he quotes in the Nectar of Instruction also this verse in the Bhaktisandarbha, Guru Goswami, and this is a translation Prabhupada gives. By diksha, one gradually becomes disinterested in material enjoyment and gradually becomes interested in spiritual life. So
there seems to be a contradiction.
What's that?
Because here it says diksha, at the time of diksha, atmasamarpan, and then his body is as good as himself. So what is it? Is it a point in time or is it a process?
It seems to be a process, because this is what Prabhupada also says. He introduces this antipur 0.192, and he says the process by which a devotee becomes attached to Krishna is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, 4.192. So it does seem to be a process. And I've heard Giri Raj Swami describe it as such, but generally speaking, ecclesiastically, we see it as that time, when you get your beads and you make your
vows. Are you initiated yet? The Guru means that, at that point. Did you go through initiation, get a new name and make vows?
Right. But does that process, it actually may even precede the actual ceremony? Because, for instance, in Chopati, you've got devotees that are waiting for 7-8 years before they get diksha, and they're pretty fixed up, pretty learned. Any comments on this? And then there's also the whole discussion about, when is the karmic fan unplugged? There's many references, throughout Prabhupada's books, how karma is reduced by the devotional process.
Yeah.
And here we've got, this transcendental spiritual body, at the time of initiation. Definitely unplugged at that point, but...
Yeah, but then the ceremony is over and you have too much prasadam and you go to sleep and you have a dream. And so you plug it back in.
So it's a whole question of plugging and unplugging. And
that's exactly what it is. You're unplugging and plugging. You got to stop plugging. You leave it unplugged. Cut off the end of it so you plug it in. This is an ongoing discussion. And certainly, if I look at and maybe Ron can help with this, Diksha Kali means the time of initiation. That's what it means. But then it also says Atma Samarpana. It means full surrender of oneself. Well, we certainly at the ceremony, you know, there's so many things where that's symbolized, with so many obeisances and vows in front of the fire, in front of the devotees, in front of the deities, right? The whole idea is to say, okay, now you're entering a new life, right? You're surrendered. But we know from practical experience that full surrender is an ongoing process, that it rarely happens. It could happen that's it, no more. You know, you cast off your gross conceptions and everything, and then on, every moment of your life is one of devotion. But it is a process to come to this point and to really realize the full import and profound transformation that diksha is meant to be. But it's an important kind of transition, because, you know, you have a different name and you identify yourself with that name, which is a name related to Krishna Lila, of course. And you take vows, you look different, you know. You've shaved up nicely, you know, the teeth. All of these symbols are important. In and of themselves, they're not realization, but they help us to stay on that side, at least in that process of more and more purification. So I would, you know, there's a verse, you didn't quote the verse, there's a verse describing diksha as a process of the transmission of transcendental knowledge. What is it? Yeah, divyam jnanam, right, dadat, yeah. So, yeah, the danger is, just to, you know, because this diksha is like one of those hot topics, you know, for the last 30 years, and that is that it's a process, right, of transmission of transcendental knowledge. And I'm getting my knowledge from Prabhupada through his books and through his lectures and like that. And therefore, I'm being initiated by Prabhupada, and I'm his disciple. Bas, that's it. You know, nobody else is a disciple, even if you, Prabhupada had long, you know, passed away. So that, you know, tension between, because the understanding can always be skewed to what you're trying to accomplish with it. You know, that's part of what this whole thing is. The diksha is the process, but Prabhupada, you know, so much in ordinary parlance talked about, okay, at the time of initiation, now it's time for you to be initiated. And initiation meant, you know, in the context, yes, you know, the fire, the name, the vows, all these different things, the deeds, you know. So it means both things. But the deeper meaning, as you pointed out and as mentioned here, is the full surrender. You know, at least the understanding that that's what you have to strive for as quickly as possible. And then your diksha will really be complete, if you will. But diksha still has a time here. And because after all, when the devotee's body is thus transformed into spiritual existence, the devotee in that transcendental body renders service to the lotus feet of the Lord. Well, it'd be nice if we, you know, if we felt like that, but I don't know if my body is 100% in spiritual existence. And Krishna is taking pleasure in the good qualities of my body. I'm not about to. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Oh, wait a minute. We had, Ramina, you had some. Oh, come some. Ragatmika?
Can I just say one last thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it's basically the platform of Bhagavad Gita, which you described, where one can actually enter into the pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah. But that's quite a bit up the scale there from Adho Shaddhata.
Over the last couple of days, I've been thinking of this. As you said today, the jiva is is rebirth millions of lifetimes of Brahma.
Could be.
Okay. So that's safe to assume we've been...
Yeah. All right, let's go with that.
Okay. And we know Krishna wants us home more than we want to go home.
Yes.
Wow, but it doesn't look like it. How would he create a situation where we'd be so covered after millions of lifetimes of Brahma and still not getting it?
Is that his fault or our fault? this is the hint of the problem of evil coming in now, you know?
Why? Problem of evil or ego?
No, it's called the problem of evil. It's like it's a standard dilemma in religions that have no understanding of karma and reincarnation. There's even a field called theodicy. You know, how can there be a God who's all merciful and all powerful and still allow the innocent children to suffer? Or how can there be a God who doesn't, you know, I mean, we've been through millions of lives of Brahma. Isn't that enough punishment? Now, why doesn't he just make us enlightened or, you know, make it so that we have to be enlightened? But the point is that he's always trying, but it has to be, this is brought out in another purport here, is that love means that it has to be the free will. We always have that free will to turn away from Krishna. Just think about chanting japa. You know, I could go through it every day. You're chanting japa. All right, I'm absorbed now. We just had a beautiful artik. You know, Hare Krishna, Krishna, sweet, sweet. But then, you know, time goes on. Body's doing messages. And the mind, which is very obstinate and very strong, right? It's going here and going there. You're not hearing perfectly anymore. The mind is not completely calm. So that means that the mind is turning away from Krishna, even though he's there on our tongue. You know, there's still some benefit, obviously, we're still chanting, so the mind is very complicated. You could be doing several things at once. But every day we experience it, this turning away from Krishna. And you know, until we come to the point of we just want to turn toward Krishna, you know, where is Krishna? You know, oh, if I could only see Krishna. You know, that mood, when it's constant, and just we you know, dying to do more service for Krishna, there's not enough hours in the day, you know, then we can experience, you know, some of the original state. But hey, you know, this is what the material world is. This is what we've been given. We wanted this place where we could play at being God. And so, yeah, we can become Brahma. You know, we could become some demigod. We could become a powerful person here and be in more illusion. But until we, by the mercy of the devotees, or Krishna himself, mostly by the devotees, as I say, in spite of our nonsense, they still want to, you know, disturb us. You distributed, you know, probably a million books. How many times? You have to get the attention of these guys and somehow break through the barrier so that they show a little interest. That's Krishna through the devotee as an intervention. Even more merciful than the devotees. At the end of the, than Krishna, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, oh, don't speak the Bhagavad Gita to those who have no devotion, no austerity, right? And in the purport, Prabhupada says, devotees are sometimes more merciful than Krishna. Even without, you know, they'll speak the Bhagavad Gita in Sunday feast where someone just wandered in off the street. So that's Krishna through the devotees trying to break through this barrier we've created through millions of births of Brahma. But we're trapped. We're bound up by the gunas. So you know, he's trying. He's trying from within as the super soul externally. We're so stubborn that we reject life after life. So Krishna is all merciful, but we're also all stubborn. So it's a battle. All right. Does someone have another comment? Ramiro had his hand up. I guess we're not going to get to the marketing Bhagavad Gita. I'll read the last few verses. Go ahead,
Prabhu. I'd like to understand a little better what happens. Like, you know, give an example of going to a football game, you're chanting the holy name, people like no interest, and then suddenly the holy name enters their ear, or somehow they hear the Bhagavatam. So, at that point, they were proceeding in the material life. Are they suddenly now, Krishna arranges a fork in the road and they take a different path, or something?
Well, it usually doesn't happen that they drop their beer and their flags and they do join the party, does it?
Well, I mean, they can. they still think they're on the other path, but now they're gradually.
Well, the way I understand it, this may be wrong, is that at that moment, when the holy name enters their ear and goes deep, millions of lifetimes of karma have been eradicated. But unfortunately, that fan is still going really fast. You know, they don't know it. And so the momentum takes them, you know, away from the party and into the night. And so they start a whole new set of karma. You see? In other words, the you know, the human consciousness is very deep, you know. And so there's so many things in our subconscious we have no idea, you know. But we know from the Bhagavatam, yes, that, you know, is part of the influence of your, of what makes your destiny. But as soon as you hear the holy name, or especially chant the holy name, take a little part in devotional service, Nehabukamanashosti, then you're not going to lose the human form, right? That's sure. You know, that's the greatest danger, the most fearful danger. But that doesn't mean you're going back to Godhead, you know, anytime soon. That depends on your sincerity of taking up the process and actually proceeding.
But still, there's like a seed planted.
The seed is planted. And either in this life or next life, it's called the Gyata Sukriti. You know, that's the Gyata Sukriti, even just hearing the holy name. But when and how that will fructify into them actually taking seriously, you know, you can't trace it out. This is a standard thing. What about this? As soon as you start talking about karma and its intricacies, all bets are off, you know, because it's just too complicated. But we are assured, yes, that the benefit is there. And this is a great inducement for devotees to go out and chant, even in difficult circumstances or where it seems hopeless, you know, not just chant, but distribute books. Somehow or other, try to engage the souls, because the super soul is in there. Every book distributor knows, you know, I never thought that person would take a book, right? But somehow there was something in there that clicked. And this, you know, this big businessman or old lady who looked like, you know, wouldn't be a million years attracted, says, oh, you know, I've been looking for the Bhagavad Gita all my life or something, and I need to take a book. Yeah, please. I'm sorry. We have what to do. You referee.
Do you know at that point how shattered when they get that contract? Ego continues and
it's going to ego is definitely interfering. False ego is very, very powerful. But the benefit is there. All right.
I love that image that when the soul finally hears the holy name at the first time or what touches a breath, that they're caught in Lord Chaitanya's net.
Okay.
Well, where is that shastrically based then?
Where is that what?
Shastrically based. Because I understand they're caught in Lord Chaitanya's net, meaning they'll get another opportunity sooner than later, again, sometime, you know, to contact you, you know, whatever. It'll qualify them more.
Yeah, well, I mean, can you give a translation? And the reference?
Why is it passed from? I can tell you tomorrow. This isn't going to be
all right.
It's a famous Bhagavad.
Hold it up.
Bhagavad Bhakta Sangana Parijayate. Whenever a conditioned soul comes in contact with that wood, then he is not material sukriti, it's a bhakti unmukhi sukriti,
yeah,
is born. That's called net of Mahatma. And then it may take many lives, it could be million, but he will be eventually come one day and become fully.
There you go.
Well, and he'll get a human birth in his next life?
Yeah, that Prabhupada should. All right, we have to end in the back, or what you decide.
I'll make this really short. Just in regards to Ramya Prabhu's question, if I can just say a little. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada describes, when you're talking about the living entity, he gives the example like there are logs floating down a stream, so the water is carrying them, but then sometimes one log may get hooked on the banks of the stream. Whilst other logs are going, he got a little hold up. So it's like, hearing the holy name, he might be struck for a little bit. That's like getting a little hold back from his flow of material life.
But then he gets swept away again.
But then he gets swept away again, and then he gets hooked again. And eventually, he may get hooked where the devotee drag him out, and then he becomes a
devotee. That's very nice. But and you see the implication of that, is that those of us who are, you know, we have to try as hard as possible to reach as many people as possible. Because we don't know what their background was. The person may have been hooked, and now this time he's really going to get hooked and pulled in onto the land. So it's an impetus for enthusiastic preaching, which is the way Prabhupada said we should try to prepare. Okay, I'm just going to read the last few verses because it's time. So Prabhupada begins this prayer. My dear Lord Krishna, you're so kind upon this useless soul. This is Markandeya Bhagavatam, composed in September 18th, 1965, which corresponds to September 22nd today. This is when Prabhupada actually landed in Boston Harbor. You're so kind upon this useless soul, but I don't know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied. Very appropriate to today's verse. And therefore, they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva. I don't know how they will be able to understand it, but I know your causeless mercy can make everything possible because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I'm simply praying for your mercy so I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have become under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand their message. Then he quotes Srinivatam Sukhata Krishna, so we should know that passage. Krishna purifies the heart from within when you hear about him. So he quotes the whole thing. And then the last few verses. And thus he will be, the living entity who gets absorbed in hearing, he will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I'm very unfortunate, unqualified, most fallen. Therefore, I'm seeking your benediction so I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I'm sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel enlightened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I'm just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. Make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta. And now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, coming to the Prabhupada.
And Whatever. Thank you.